Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 11 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Plant people, today we have Michael Perry, otherwise known as Mr. Plant Geek, on the interwebs, and he is one hell of a guy. We have a wonderful plant chat, but don't let his name fool you. He is by no means a traditional geek, per se. You probably know him from his edgy photos on his Instagram account, Mr. Plant Geek, with his always changing hair colors and incredibly impressive collection of tattoos. Or maybe you've seen his cheeky Rude Botany t-shirts with sayings like Philadelphus erectus or Rubus cockburnianus in bold lettering across the chest. I'm giggling just reading those words. He pushes the envelope with his plant brand, and from the minute I found Michael on Instagram and started looking on his website, MrPlantGeek.com, I was just immediately drawn to his lighthearted, positive spin on all things plants. He doesn't take himself too seriously, but he uses his serious knowledge of plants to allow him to travel the world teaching what he loves. Today, we have just a lovely plant chat about how he built his empire, what he's excited about in the plant space, and some tips for plant parents like him who travel a lot. Just as an FYI, we did record this episode in December, so there are a couple of references to the Christmas season, but even though the holidays have passed, it all still applies because I know I am sitting in New York City right now freezing my butt off, and I know a lot of you guys are too. So anything we talk about can still be applied to January, February, March. Also, Michael and I talk about a lot of different specific plants, and I've given you guys some visual aids on the blog associated with this podcast, which you can find at www.bloomandgrowradio.com/podcast. Enjoy our chat. All right, Michael, thank you so much for being on Bloom and Grow Radio today.
No worries. Really, really happy to be here.
I want to start off by saying I love the Mr. Plant Geek. I love the name. And it's so funny because you look at your Instagram and you're this, like, my parents asked me who I was interviewing on the show this week. And I was like, oh, I'm interviewing this guy, Mr. Plant Geek. He's like the edgy bad boy of, like, Instagram plants, because you always, like, your hair is always a different color and you're always like in your Rude Botany tees, and like you're this edgy guy. And then today, as I'm like researching you and I'm finding these YouTube videos of you talking about different plants you've developed, like you're a total nerd just like the rest of us.
You made me sound like a gardening gangster.
Right, you are. Exactly
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just a guy that's obsessed with plants, right, and anything about plants. And I'm also, I guess, interested in fashion to a degree. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say to any degree that I'm fashionable, but I do like to try out new things and new trends. And as I said to you offline a moment ago, I like to say yes to everything. So somebody says, why not dye your hair gray? Oh, yes. Why not? Yesterday, actually, I did one of the things that's one of my greatest fears. But I actually, just because I said yes to it, I had to do it. So I had to sing on camera for a Christmas carol that they're putting together as some of the bloggers online. And I hate singing at the best of the times. You know,
that's funny.
Singing in front of a camera, in front of my partner here in the apartment in New York, and kind of having to sing these lines of a Christmas carol, and I could have died inside, but I said yes, and I knew I said yes because it was a good thing to push me into doing it, mm-hmm. and that's what I've done for most of my career, you know, just saying yes to things, pushing myself out there, which I'd recommend to anyone in any line of work. You don't know that you can't do it until you try to do it, and then usually you can do it. So that's where I've got to where I am, and I'm going to continue to do that. So I think probably feel the fear and do it anyway. Isn't that the word?
I love that
phrase.
I love that. That's too, like, when I think about 4 months ago, I didn't know how to make a podcast. I tell everyone now, like, Google can teach you anything. Like,
exactly.
Google, YouTube, like, you can freaking learn anything you want.
And I get frustrated when I can't understand something, because usually you can do everything, and it makes us really such multi, multi-skilled, doesn't it?
I love it. Yeah, I love it. And also,
well.
If you're telling me you're a singer now, then I think you and I need to greenlight a Broadway show about plants that we can star in.
Wow, that is a really cool idea. Really cool idea. But can I not just sit in the corner of the stage just looking cool in an armchair?
You can be the plant.
I'm going to write that down. Once I've written it down, it means it's going to happen. Do you realize that?
Yes, I love it. I love it. Law of attraction, right?
Yes. That's Broadway show about plants, right? Okay, Broadway, yep. Sorry. Carry on.
Done. Coming to you in 2019. Starring Michael Perry and Maria Viola. And I think that goes hand in hand. I mean, we can just dive right into your experience with plants. But I mean, you would have thoughts about what, you know, a tomato plant that can also have potatoes. And then you made it happen with the tomtato, right? Is that correct?
Yeah,
like, you spent time developing new species of plants.
Yes. So, I mean, with the tomtato, that is a concept which was around for many years, but much forgotten. And what I did with that one, I brought it to a wider audience. So I brought it to the public in the UK, and English gardeners, they loved it because it's space saving, it's great for kids. And of course, more importantly, non-GMO, so 100% organic and a natural process. But then I took that a stage further and I invented the egg and chips plant, which was eggplant, aubergines on the top, and it was potatoes on the bottom. So kind of these real kind of Frankenstein plants are kind of plants that get the headlines, and that's what I'm about. So getting people interested in plants that wouldn't usually be interested in plants. So, you know, edible flowers, unusual edible berries. Of course, houseplants is somewhere that a lot of people that have got no interest in gardening whatsoever, people that haven't got green fingers, green thumbs, they regard themselves as having completely, you know, black thumbs. They now can grow plants because they're interested in them for different reasons. We're turning people on with plants in different ways. And that's what I've been trying to do for most of my career as well. So to get people interested in, you know, the world's first blue rose or the first, you know, creeping lily or climbing petunia, that's where my buzz about plants is. And, you know, I can look at a plant and I can immediately think of a different gut kind of marketing name for it. So I was at New York Botanic Garden last week, and they've got a anturium, which is a houseplant that you'll know. It's an anturium scandens, which means it's a trailing version, and it has these white berries. And the moment I looked at it, and it was in the tropical house at New York Botanic Garden, and I looked at it and I was like, tropical mistletoe. There we are.
I love it.
There we have tropical mistletoe there at the Botanic Garden. So if you want to have a tropical seasonal snog, then you need to pop up there and
snog.
And go. So, yeah, it's a good thing we didn't broadcast from there the other day.
I know, right?
It ended very differently.
Who knows what would have happened? Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I love that. So, yes, yeah.
Looking at those different angles and finding out what would get somebody interested in that plant that otherwise just looks very normal and everyday to them. So, yeah, it's what I love and what I've done for many, many years.
So as someone who like genuinely has no understanding of how you do that, walk me through from the idea to the looking at the plant that you've created. Like, what does that look like? What's the time period for that? Kind of take me through that whole process. It's so interesting.
Yeah. So I guess there's a few different ways that I've helped to create new plants over the years. So one of the first would be working with the breeding team at Thompson Morgan, where I used to work. And indeed, I used to hand pollinate some plants myself over the years from time to time. And that would either be that you would have a vision of the plant you wanted to create, and then you would go about hybridizing the correct kind of species and varieties in order to get there. And that process could be anything from 5 years to 20 years, or it might never happen because, you know, that marriage may never be possible. Or even if it's possible, those plants may not set seed. They may not be viable seeds. So pollination, cross-pollination and hybridizing can be a long kind of quite painful process. Another kind of way of raising new plants is by selection. So you could be looking at a plant and noticing that something's a little bit different. So it could be that you're growing some poppies in your garden and you notice one that's a lot shorter than the others. It maybe has a different color to the rest. You'd then select that plant and isolate the plant and then save the seeds and then sow them the next year, see if that plant comes true, and then you would have your new plant. So that's almost natural breeding. So it's actually the bees that have done that pollination for you, and it's only your eagle eye that has actually noticed that plant's a bit different and selected the new benefit or the new kind of attribute that that plant's got. Another way of creating a new plant is almost grafting. And grafting is where the egg and chips plant and the tomtato, we also call it ketchup and fries in the US, that's where those plants came from. And that's basically stitching two plants together. So it's basically sticking one on top of the other. And that only works with two plants that are in the same family. And it only works with plants that have got a bit of a kind of almost slightly woody stem. So if you imagine the stem of a potato plant, mm-hmm. it's quite structured. And it's the same diameter as the stem of a tomato plant. So we cut the top off a potato plant, the top off a tomato plant, and then put one on top of the other. And because they're both in the same family, Solanaceae, they were compatible and they grew together. And what you get is actually a tomato plant growing on top of a potato plant. There's no transmittal of kind of genes or anything in between. So you've still got potatoes that are the same and tomatoes that are the same, but they're working in the same, they're just growing in the same zone. So it's saving you space in the garden and creating a lot of fun as well, and something that's a real novelty. I mean, grafting is natural. So you're just stitching those plants together naturally. There's no breeding involved either. They also graft a lot of dwarf fruit trees. So fruit trees that you would grow on the patio or the terrace are often grafted onto a dwarf rootstock. So you've got a kind of big, more modern variety on the top. It could be, you know, one that's very, very vigorous, but they graft that onto a dwarf stock, which means that it only ever grows to a dwarf height. So then you can have that short plant that you can then harvest from on the terrace. And similarly with roses, they graft newer roses onto older roses because they want to have that disease resistance and that stronger growing, but with the newer, fresher colors that may not have that resistance. So that is, you know, you've got cross-pollination, you've got selection, and you've also got grafting are always creating a new plant. But there's also one other way, which is one that I've maxed out on over the years, mm-hmm. which is marketing. So it's looking at a plant that already exists and thinking of a different way to use that plant. So over the years, I've looked at petunias. There are some very vigorous petunias that cover the ground. One plant could cover, you know, four square feet on the ground, mm-hmm. especially in the case of Petunia Easy Wave, for example, which is very successful petunia around the world. I wondered, you know, things that go outwards and down, they'll also go upwards. So I trained some of those petunias onto a frame and created a climbing petunia. So that is then a new way of marketing a plant we already know. Similarly with lilies, I placed 20 pot grown lilies in a square meter of ground and kind of started to work on a ground cover lily concept, because actually over the years they'll multiply, they'll knit together, they'll cover the ground in difficult kind of shady corners beneath trees and shrubs. And so then you've got a ground cover lily. So again, a brand new category of plant that didn't exist before, but not with any new genetics, but with plants that are already there, but using them in a very different way in the garden. So there's so many ways you can create these new plants and new ideas. And it's obviously something that I'm addicted to. I spent almost 20 years with Thompson Morgan in the UK doing that. And now I do that with a range of different companies around the world. And so with Sutton's in the UK and HSN in the US. So it's fun. It's addictive.
It's amazing. So it sounds like you, for a very long time, just have this natural apt for seeing something on its side, you know, looking at things from a different way. Yeah. Have you been like that since you were a kid? I know that gardening started for you when you were very young. Like, were you doing these things when you were a child? And was that always your brain? Or did you kind of train your brain to do that with all your time at P.S. for our American listeners or international listeners, Thompson & Morgan is Britain's largest mail order plant company. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
that's
just right. For everyone who knows what we're talking in, Michael worked there for like 20 years, did you say?
Yeah, 18, 19. Yeah.
Yeah. So, where did that side of your brain get developed?
Yeah, I would say it's always been natural. I've always kind of tried to think, well, not even tried to think, but always naturally thought outside the box. And when I was a kid, I wasn't necessarily thinking of plants in that way, but I was definitely always thinking of the alternative. And I remember on a lot of shopping trips to the local supermarket, I would always want to have the food that was a bit different, the food that was maybe in the foreign food aisle that my parents probably would never buy anything from. And so almost at that age, I was almost wanting to have something that was different, alternate, and looking outside of the box. And I guess when I started my career in plants, that was something that I naturally did as well. And so, you know, working with customers in the UK, I had to find ways to make those plants appealing to them. So, you know, a lot of new plants that are grown in Europe are developed by the breeders in order to flower maybe a week earlier or to be a slightly clearer red color. Those plants are not necessarily interesting to the mail order consumer, because right, those are the plants which are developed to be sold in the garden centers earlier in the season, and perhaps a little bit prematurely as well, because, you know, a lot of consumers buy their bedding plants too early in the UK and they plant them out and then they have failures. But that's why a big industry has grown up with the mail order services. So you've got plants that are perhaps more distinctive, plants that have got rosebud flowers, pickety edges, those plants that won't perform as commercial specimens, but plants that will perform perfectly well in the garden and make a great plant to sell by a mail order, because the commercial establishments won't sell them because they don't flower early enough to look good on the garden center bench. They're not tidy enough to be on the garden center bench, but it gives you those plants to sell through mail order. So I guess with that mail order edge, I was always building the story around the plant. So why would the person want to buy this plant? What would it do for them? So why would, you know, this trailing version of this plant be good for you? And it's something that nobody else has in their garden. We all know that gardening is very, very competitive as well. So everybody wants something that their neighbor hasn't got. Mm. So that's where kind of my marketing skills really kind of built up over the years. And I would say my role in, well, almost my whole career has been 50% marketing and 50% horticulture, because, you know, the marketing skills are so strong and they've had to develop in that way. And of course, that has carried over to my presenting as well. So, you know, I'm partly a gardening host on HSN in the UK, and I also appear on various TV shows in the UK as well. So I'm working in the US on HSN and in the UK on ITV, which is one of the main channels. So I can communicate to the consumer about those plants, but also have that background industry knowledge through my travels, through getting behind the scenes and getting in the kitchens of all the major plant breeders in Europe as well. So yeah, it's that perfect blend of skills.
Yeah. What would you say is, because obviously you have a lot of experience with outdoor gardens too, but as we're a little bit more houseplant focused here, what would you say is like the craziest combination, splicing together of plants, or like most exciting thing you've seen in house plants?
The indoor, there is so much development in house plants, and so much more to come. And I'm actually planning some trips to some house plant breeders in the spring in Europe as well. So I hope to find out even more then.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I really love the kind of aspect of trying indoor plants as house plants, the kind of tabletop plants. So there's a lot of plants in Europe which are being used as tabletop outside. So mini calabricoas, which is like a mini petunia, which will grow perfectly well indoors on a windowsill as well. So this is almost the aspect where you could bring some of those outdoor plants indoors. So that's a really great concept that I'm excited about, which then carries forward to kind of olive trees as well, and outdoor perhaps vegetable plants, kind of those veg and herbs that you can grow on the windowsill indoors. So I love growing herbs. I've been growing herbs since I was about 12 years old, and I was actually selling herbs through a mail order herb nursery that I set up myself at that age as well. So I kind of got quite a knowledge of herbs and edible flowers.
So at 12 years old, that was your first entrepreneurial job.
I know.
Selling herbs, that's amazing.
Springfield Herb Nursery, and I even had every plant laid out in an A to Z in my backyard as well. And I was dispatching those. I had a catalog as well. It was, don't be fooled, it was very small scale, but it was kind of my first real taste of marketing. And I remember putting adverts in the back of gardening magazines and journals as well. So, wow. Yeah, so herbs has always been a big interest of mine. And I like the fact that we can grow some of those as houseplants. You know, indoors, as long as you've got a well-lit position and a room that's kind of moderately and kind of equally warm as well, not too many extremes, you can grow some of those herbs inside. And also vegetables. There's no reason why you can't grow a few lettuce plants or a few spring onions. I believe you call them scallions over here, mm-hmm. or chili plants on the windowsill as well. So in terms of the next batch of houseplants, I think they'll include a lot of edibles as well. So, you know, herbs that can be grown in pots that you can almost kind of use as topiary, and like the Greek basil, the smaller leaf basils that you can grow as well. So almost houseplants that have got uses as well. And moringa is a houseplant that I'm completely obsessed with at the moment, because it's one of the plants which has got some of the most nutrients, vitamins and minerals of any plant in the wild. It's also known as the vegetable tree in some areas as well. It's slightly tropical. It would be need to be grown as a houseplant or in a conservatory, but that is a plant that I'm keeping an eye on. I'm going to release that very soon in the UK to UK consumers over there. So I'd really recommend looking out for that one, because there's so many health properties. So
it's edible? Is it like a lettuce?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
No, it's almost like it's got a very ferny leaf and it grows like a tree. So it's in the wild, it can become quite a big tree, but you can almost prune it back,
okay.
and have a much smaller version of it, which you could grow in the conservatory or in the home in a well-lit position. But this is a houseplant that has a use as well. So I would say that edible houseplants is potentially that next big trend. So houseplants that you can also use in the kitchen. That would be my kind of next big tip, I would say.
So in your monthly Plant Geek magazine, you have the plan of the month every month. So are you saying, have you called January's plan of the month? That's what it's going to be?
No, January's going to be a Sakakaka, which is an outdoor plant.
What a name.
Yeah, I know. That's from the Rude Botany t-shirt.
Yeah, so, I love it.
We need to cover those off later, actually, and describe
absolutely.
Why we're laughing about
yes,
every plant name.
Absolutely.
So that is an outdoor plant, which is also known as Christmas box, which is powerfully fragrant. And the plant of the month tries to have a plant that's almost in season. So I want to try and make sure each plant is in season in that Plant Geek magazine. But the magazine is almost a way of pulling together everything that happens on my social media and on the website, because there's a lot of news that goes through the website. I kind of positioning MrPlantGeek.com almost as the BuzzFeed of the gardening world, because there's so many interesting contributors out there. And it's, you know, I never sit here and pretend that I know about everything. So I've got a range of guest bloggers who've been on there talking about breeding lotus plants and breeding tropical blue colored hibiscus plants as well. So there's so much going through there and kind of, you know, keeping on in touch with all the trends and all the different things that are happening in this brilliant horticultural world. And, you know, when I say world, I really do mean the world as well.
And it's so interesting too, because if anyone follows you on Instagram or your website or anything, I mean, you are in a different city, if not country, like every other day. So when, especially I'm sure when it comes to tropical houseplants, you're probably mm-hmm. seeing a lot of these in their natural habitat too.
Definitely. And every time I scream,
I bet.
I can be such a fan when I see a plant in the wild. Mm-hmm. One example was, I've been on holiday in Bali recently for 4 days.
I know, I'm so jealous of that, by the way.
Sorry, I just had to mention it again. and there's a plant called Habeneria radiata, which is the white egret orchid. It's a plant that I sold a lot of when I was at Thompson & Morgan the last few years. And it has this beautiful flower. It's an orchid. It's only a few inches tall. And the flower, when you turn it on its side, it looks like an egret orchid in flight. It is gorgeous. I was walking through this jungle area in Bali, and I literally screamed gently, very gently, but I screamed nevertheless. And there was a habanera type of plant there in the scrubland. It was actually a close relative called Pectilis Suzanniae, which is a bigger version, and it's called the Seattle orchid. But it still has this beautiful flower, which is pure white, and it looks like a bird in flight. And I was just, oh my God, I've seen this plant in the wild. And I just was, oh. My partner's not into plants at all, but he was like, what?
Right. He was like, Michael, why are you crying?
It was just amazing. And I had a similar epiphany at New York Botanic Garden last week when I saw Depia splendens, which is a flower that looks like a yellow fuchsia. And it's actually related to the coffee plant rather than the fuchsia plant. And I saw this for the first time ever, albeit not in the wild, because it's just extinct in the wild, but I saw it at the Botanic Gardens of New York Botanic Garden. And it was just absolutely gorgeous and resplendent. And I put it on social media, and it's probably one of my most popular tweets ever. It's had about 400 retweets so far, I believe. But it's such a beautiful plant. And I've been poring over these plants for years in encyclopedias and books, and since the internet came along, on the internet as well. And when I see these plants in real life, that is, it's a moment for me, because this is, I don't know, plants are what I love, and that's it. And when I see them in the wild or in different places, and it's just phenomenal for me. So yes, and that's why I love to share it with everyone as well.
And it's one thing, as you said, to be looking at it in a book or to be trying to understand the plant, you know, on a page. And it's another thing to kind of have your heart skip a beat when you're like, holy shit, this is a living thing. You know, this is a real living, evolving thing that's constantly changing. And, you know, these things do live. I think, especially with people with houseplants, and I'm totally guilty of doing this too, sometimes you forget that all of these plants that you know, so carefully take care of in your little pots that you buy on the internet and like all that stuff, like they all come from nature. They all come from existing, you know, survival of the fittest, kind of existing in nature on its own without, you know, getting filtered water and, you know, all the other fancy things we all do for our houseplants.
Is that, and that's why I'm consistently obsessed with plants, because we got so much to thank them for. You know, I'm sat here at a wooden table, you know, there's, I've bought some shoes recently that are made of algae. You know, I've got some jeans that are made of bamboo fiber. There's so many plant-based products that are around us as well. And that is, you know, we've got so much to thank plants for, you know.
Totally.
They're amazing.
They are. So you're now, you have a degree in plants from where? What is your education in plants? Are you entirely self-taught, or you went to school for it?
Well, I went to college after school. So in the UK, we go to school until 16, and then you either go on to sixth form, which is higher education there, or you go to college for similar courses. And I went to college and did a national diploma in horticulture. But I would say it was very general. It was everything from economics to driving tractors to how to care for golf courses. I was rubbish at everything apart from the plant stuff. So kind of I maxed out on that. And I was also, you know, growing plants at the weekends at home, selling plants through my own herb nursery at local markets as well. And I was really lucky to get the opportunity to start at Thompson & Morgan when I was just 18 years old.
And you started as like an apprentice and worked your way up to like a very high level created for you job, right?
Yeah, so I really kind of was propelled through the company based on, you know, my knowledge and my enthusiasm and kind of my know-how. So that was really where it came, how it developed. And yes, 18 years of experience working from, you know, pollinating flowers by hand through to working with customer service to traveling, putting together catalogs, you know, working with design teams, then kind of developing to the media side. So then appearing on TV, radio, all those things that I would have been far too shy to do when I was 18. But the company helped, gave me that confidence to keep saying yes, which is what I do today. And that is what I continue to do and develop and grow and have obviously, you know, become relatively well known in this small corner of the horticultural world.
Yeah, it's amazing. So what... What propelled you to take the leap from your 20-year career at Thompson & Morgan to being like a full-time kind of serial entrepreneur with everything having to do with plants, you know, the Mr. Plant Geek TM empire?
Yes. Well, I think a lot is to do with timing. So when the time is right, you just feel it and it just happens. And sometimes it happens without you even knowing. So I'm a big fan of just timing and letting things take their course naturally. And that's how it happened. And I guess in my last year at Thompson & Morgan, there was a few kind of projects on the side that were coming up and kind of different companies that were perhaps talking to me and saying, oh, we'd like to be involved with you on that, et cetera, et cetera. So it just kind of then developed, started to give me the confidence to then finally kind of decide to go freelance. And with Thompson & Morgan, because I was, I guess, in quite a key role, my notice period was 6 months. So it was where I had to really know in advance that I was gonna do this. So in the April the year before, I handed in my notice and then obviously had 6 months to kind of plan it out a little bit more, wrap up everything in my current job. And then by the September, I was then, out on my own.
Ready to fly.
Yeah. And I had, you know, companies that were working with me from day one, and it just then developed from there. So I haven't looked back at all. You know, no hard feelings to Thompson & Morgan, but you kind of get to a point where you're moving on, you're doing different things, and the timing is right, like I said. So yeah, it's fantastic. And yeah, I don't want to stop.
That's amazing. So let's talk a little bit about Mr. Plant Geek, the empire, your blog, your Instagram, you're also like constantly traveling to, from my understanding, give lectures, if it's to garden clubs or plant conventions. And I mean, it's just remarkable. And like the first thing we have to talk about is the Rude Botany Teas. My favorite part, my favorite page on Mr. Plant Geek website.
Okay, let's do Rude Botany first then. Yeah. So Rude Botany is basically an entirely innocent collection of t-shirts, which have plant names on them, which vary from Rubus cockburnianus to Sarcococca confusa to Clitoria ternata. And nobody can be offended at these because they are real botanical names.
It's Latin. That's it. That's
it is
real.
Latin. It raises a laugh. It's very cheeky. These are the plant names that we were laughing at all through our college years,
right?
And giggling. And we can hardly believe some of these names are real, you know, but they are. And it's not rude. It's botany. And that is the range. And so it's been phenomenally successful. Some of the proceeds of the more ruder, more phallic versions of the t-shirts, a proportion of the sale goes to Orchid Male Cancer Care in the UK. So for the Rubus cockburnianus, the Penstemon whipplianus, and a couple of others. So it's also linked to charity as well. So there's a serious side to it as well. But
oh,
it really
awesome.
Is. It's just kind of part of, and I'm sure you've noticed, I always like to be a bit cheeky in what I do as well. And kind of, I feel like a little bit of cheekiness helps everyone relax. You know, I
totally
don't like to take anything too seriously. You know, I know when to take things seriously, but also there's always an underlying kind of bubbling up of humor in things that I do. And I like to communicate with humor because I think it relaxes everyone. You shouldn't take anything too seriously. And of course, it's just,
I love that.
That's what I do with Rude Botany. And so it just developed from there. And it's a super easy process. Everything is printed digitally and centrally in the UK and then sent directly to the consumers. So
and they ship you have a lot of merch on your website. Everything ships like internationally?
Yes, as well. So
because those would make a great gift.
totally. And we send to US, we send to China, we send to Japan. So worldwide delivery on all of those items. And there's some really cool ranges too. There's the plants and potions range, which are the ones with the big letters that say gin and geraniums or pims
right.
and pennies, beer and bamboo. There's Mr. Plant Geek ones. There's I don't know where the ideas come from, but I just think of them and put them out there, and people love them. And Yeah, and they're really nice kind of community for them as well. I think since social media came along, kind of gardeners and horticulturalists really have found that social media knits it all together, and there's kind of almost like this membership, and you don't feel like a weirdo anymore. You know, when I was a kid, I felt strange and a real geek for loving plants, but now it's become normalized, which is absolutely, you know, fantastic. So
yeah, now you're the cool kid bad boy of the plant of plant Instagram.
Crazy.
Who knew that little 12-year-old?
So yes, Rood Botany, you asked me about. Else did you ask me there?
Well, no, I think you summed that up pretty good. But yeah, so you have you have your merch, you have your blog where you're constantly writing about either different plants that you love or different trips that you've taken. What do you have a favorite aspect to your whole kind of company experience on the whole?
No, I love everything, to be honest. Even travel, because do you know what? Even if you're stuck in an airport with a delay, there's still things that can entertain you because you've got the internet. I've always got maybe a blog to write or whatever, or even being on an aeroplane, there's opportunity to then do creative things or actually relax.
Totally. Well,
so yeah, never stuck.
Let's dive into travel a little bit for more of our informational section of this episode. So I don't think anybody is going to have a better idea of what to do with your plants while traveling than you, since you're always on the run. So for our listeners who are going home for the holidays or going on a trip, maybe if we could talk about what to do with your plants for either like a long weekend or a week or 2 weeks, like how would you suggest people taking care of their plants to make sure they don't come home to, you know, tremendous losses?
Well, you know, over the Christmas period, you're kind of, it's the best time to go away because it's going to be a lot cooler. Right. You'll probably notice that a lot of your plants are going into almost like a dormancy kind of rest period. So the growth will not be as accelerated as it is in the summer, kind of spring into summer. So really, those plants won't need much water. So if you're going away for anything up to, you know, 6 or 7 days, your plants will be absolutely fine as long as you give them a good watering before you go away. If you're going away for any longer, then perhaps consider sitting them in the bath or maybe in a sink and then having a moist tea towel on the side of the sink and placing the plants on there, and then you'll find that the tea towel draws up the water almost in a capillary type format. So it will then give your plants what they need when they need it. But really, this time of year is one of the easier times to leave your plants unattended. Just make sure they're in a well-lit position, that you've got relatively constant temperatures as well. Plants, they don't mind being a little bit cool or a little bit too warm, but kind of the constant change of temperature is when a lot of plants really suffer. So you'll notice that particularly with one of those typical holiday plants, the poinsettia. So constant temperatures are better. Avoid drafts, as well lit as possible, and you should be good to go.
So, okay, let's go back to, so I can put my potted plant on a wet dish towel and that's going to be enough for the plant to actually soak the water up?
Well, what you can do, you can have the, if you can imagine a wet dish towel on the side of the sink, mm-hmm. and that then trails down into the sink, and you've got a reservoir of water in the sink there.
Okay.
And it will constantly, the water will draw up, and the plant will then take it through the base of the pot when it needs it. Because, you know, when you sit a pot in a tray of pebbles, the plant draws up that moisture through the base.
Right.
Because the roots reach out for that water. So the roots always go down and look for moisture, and they will find the water if it's there. So they will take up exactly what they need. And by having that tea towel around them, it will be a moist tea towel. So it will kind of increase the humidity around your plants,
right,
which will be good for them as well. Or you can buy like a capillary matting, which does a similar job to that tea towel, but it's a lot more kind of official and built for purpose, and those can be bought from a lot of different places out there.
Plant people, if you want a visual to go along with what Michael and I have been talking about, visit the blog associated with this podcast episode at bloomandgrowradio.com/podcast for pictures and links to what we've discussed. Back to the plant chat. What about in the summer? Because I went away this summer for a week, and my apartment doesn't have central air. So when I came home, I think that my apartment was like 15 to 20 degrees hotter than it is normally when I'm home with the air conditioning on. Mm-hmm. And my plants were like real sad about it. So I just gave them like a really good water and like put the AC on and hoped for the best. I definitely did have some dropped leaves and a pothos that was like pretty pissed at me. But when it's not the winter, for people who are living in, you know, warmer climates or, mm-hmm. you know, in the summer, do you have any suggestions for that when you're dealing with heat?
I mean, if you're going away, if you can move them into a slightly cooler area of the home.
Like away from the windowsill and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be better for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to want to leave your AC on while you're away, so that's not going to work too much. But yeah, I would say a cooler corner or a bathroom, because a bathroom's always going to be cooler and a little bit more moisture in there. So I'd let them kind of be in a quiet area where the plants can just relax a little bit and have their own holiday.
Have their own bath, spa day.
Yes, that would work well.
Spa day in the bathroom. Okay, cool. That's super helpful. So you're traveling so much right now, so you don't have a collection of your own right now, but what are your dream plants to add to your collection when traveling settles down and you're able to like make a home again?
Yeah, well, first of all, we were talking earlier and saying mm-hmm. that it would be great to have a traveling plant, wouldn't it? Maybe one in a necklace.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to try and invent that quite soon.
The next Mr. Plant Geek merchandise is like jewelry, living jewelry.
Yeah, living jewelry. I think the plants that I really love in terms of houseplants are ones that you actually don't see as much on Instagram. So they're perhaps ones that are almost some of the next trends as well. So one genus is Hoya. You often will see Hoya in the heart-shaped leaves where they give them away from Valentine's and kind of write message on there and paint them. That's mm-hmm. not the Hoya to look out for. You've got to look out for Hoya carnosa or Hoya bella, which are both gorgeous, gorgeous Hoyas. They have these waxy leaves and almost waxy blooms that hang down like an upside-down umbrella with a whole collection of maybe 30 different individual florets that each have this dripping sweet nectar that my grandma used to encourage me to kind of lick it up.
Really?
When it flowered, when she had those plants when I was younger. And it's this sweet nectar, which is, it's not poisonous, it's completely safe. And it's really beautiful. And they're lovely, lovely plants. And Hoya bella has smaller leaves and it's almost more of a trailing version. They're good to look out for. So look out for Hoyas. Also, Echimenes is a very cool plant. It's known as the hot water plant. It prefers slightly warmer water. It prefers that when you water it. They've fallen out of favor in England and Europe. But when I was in Japan at Kyoto Botanic Garden a few months ago, they had a display of them. And I turned the corner and I was on a tour with the director and the translator. And again, this was a fangirl moment because I was like, whoa! And they have this big collection of 100 different echimenes of all different colors, double flowered, crested versions as well. It was phenomenal.
Echimenes, how do you spell that?
So that's Achimenes.
Okay,
so
cool.
Echimenes. And yes, and I talked to them. I said, oh, these are amazing. And they said, oh, they're just everyday plants. We're a bit bored of them, really. And I was like, what? They're incredible.
You're like, so I want a living room full of them.
So I'd look out for those. Also, there was I was behind the scenes at New York Botanic Garden last week, and there was an echeveria that I had not seen before.
Which really?
Nodulosa. I actually put it up on my Instagram a couple of days ago, and it's got this kind of a blotch, a very organized blotch in the center, which is maroon red. Ooh. Sitting on green. So it's a very unusual kind of color combination. So look out for that one as well. Also, a succulent that I still love after many years, and I used to grow them from seed with my grandma, is Lifops, which is the living.
Yes,
they are just, I just love them. And when they flower with this big daisy-like flower. And it is so unexpected. It's like, what? What are you doing there?
You look like a rock. What's that flower doing?
It's really, really strange. And just amazing to grow from seed as well, because you watch them. When they germinate, they look like this tiny rock, and it becomes bigger, 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 bigger. And it's like growing cactus from seed is great. And I mentioned growing cactus from seed on Jane Perrone's podcast in the UK. And it's such fun because it germinates. And you've got this juvenile cactus with these small spines that wouldn't hurt you. And then gradually, as each month goes by, those spines would hurt you more and more and more. It's amazing to watch cactus grow from seed. So I think for all houseplants, yes, go along to shops and buy plants, but also consider growing some from seed, because it's really fun and very rewarding.
Yeah, and then you have such a deeper appreciation for them, and kind of appreciation for like the miracle of life too, you know?
Definitely. It's very, very cool.
Watching it come from a tiny seed. Even I have a little balcony, and so I've been experimenting this past spring and summer with a balcony garden, and like I found this packet of radish seeds that I like didn't think anything of. I had like an extra pot. I like threw the seeds in a pot, way too many, like didn't space them out, and kind of forgot about them. And one day I looked over, and like there were 20 sprouts, you know, popping out of this pot. And I was just like, holy shit, that's amazing. You know, like they were nothing. These tiny little seeds that are now these gorgeous sprouts. And
yeah.
Now they're these amazing fat little radishes still growing for me. So, yeah, it's been fun. I feel like I appreciate my other plants that I buy fully grown now way more after having that experience.
It's just amazing.
Yeah.
Really amazing.
It's so cool. So speaking of...
Never get bored of plants.
Right? Because they're always changing. Yeah, they're never staying the same. A couple more questions. So give us the inside scoop. Where can we expect to be seeing you on Instagram? Like what are your travels? I know you have some really busy travel months ahead of you. Where are you going? What are you doing? What are you so excited about?
Well, I've actually got a really cool kind of lecture tour almost that starts, I guess it starts in, January in Japan. So it's got it's called Weird and Wacky Plants. So it's the Weird and Wacky Plant Project, which is basically a celebration of all these cool, different and unusual plants that I've been, you know, poring over for years and years, ever since I was a kid. And I've now brought those all together in one presentation. So
I'm doing it
almost as a tour. So in Japan, I'll be giving that lecture to a shopping center in Osaka, which is very strange.
Great.
But I work with an English garden over there, and they're doing some demos, and they've got a stand at this yearly flower show, which is at the shopping center. So that will be the first appearance of Weird and Wacky. I will also be at the Garden Expo in Wisconsin in February with the Weird and Wacky
Plants. In February, it's going to be real cold in Wisconsin in February.
That's all that everyone says. And I'm like, well, no.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'll be there. It will also be cold in Japan as well. So I'm really going to have to buy some thermals at some point. And then I've got a few dates in the UK at Cambridge Botanic Garden, Chelsea Physic Garden, and taking this Weird and Wacky Plant Show to all of those. So I'm going to be making up some posters soon, which will give you kind of all the tour dates. So it makes me sound a bit like Rihanna.
You're going on tour, you little plant rock star. I love that.
So I've been putting some work into that over the Christmas period. And yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. And it's almost like the first time that I brought together everything that I love into one presentation. So I'm really super pumped about that.
Oh, I love it. That's awesome. I hope maybe you can like live stream a presentation for people to call in on.
I'll think about how I can do that one.
Yeah, that could be really cool.
Maybe you'll come along to one of them.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. Cool. And then the question that I like to ask everybody, but what, you know, aside the fact that, you know, plants clean the air and they look really appealing, why do you think everybody should have plants? And especially for us urban dwellers to kind of go out of our way to get a houseplant, why do you think having houseplants enrich people's lives or plants in general?
Is because it's cool, a good enough answer.
Totally.
I think even from a decor kind of point of view, it's, you know, you look at a room with just all those harsh, you know, textures and kind of everything looks very dry, mm-hmm. you know, but the moment you put a plant in there, it brings it to life. Because it is, it's life, you know. Why not add some living decor to your usual room setup? Another reason would be the health benefits. You know, having a plant indoors is going to help with the air purification on some level. It's going to make you feel good mentally. It's good for mindfulness. You know, some plants that have got uses such as herbs, vegetables, edible flowers, then it's good for your body as well, actually, in a practical sense. And, you know, even that kind of process of interacting with plants is, you know, it's calming. It helps you learn. It's a great new hobby that I find it amazing that more and more people are kind of cottoning onto and getting involved with. And it's brilliant for me because I've been banging on about plants for years now. Fabulous that everyone else is as well now. And right. I'm almost like, oh. I tried to tell you guys years ago that plants were cool.
Right.
And now you're telling me they're cool. I'm like, I know.
You're like, yeah, guys, I get it. I started this trend.
Told you.
That's awesome.
It's brilliant. And, you know, not just growing plants, but even getting involved with more plant-based products is great too, because then people realize how much we have to thank plants for, which is brilliant. So.
Totally. And how that all helps the environment too, you know.
Totally.
Oh, man, this has been so awesome. Thank you so much for spending some time plant chatting with me. Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.